Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Does it feel a bit like Groundhog Day when it comes to Major League Baseball, where they keep sending proposals back and forth, and both the players and the owners keep saying that whichever proposal arrives from the other side is basically dead on arrival? Well, the Major League Baseball Players Association sent back a proposal to Major League Baseball yesterday that would have a season of 89 games. And it at least brings the two sides a little bit closer. But this is being shot down already by the owners, who on Monday proposed a 76-game season. So they're still apart on money and games. But we're talking about the difference between 76 and 89, which is at least in theory substantially closer to each other. I think maybe the most interesting part of this is that it would expand the playoffs to 16 teams, which would be roughly half of Major League Baseball teams advancing to the postseason, and would give us a lot longer postseason. Now, the thing that maybe stands out to the most to me about this entire process is, frankly, I mean, the fact that every single day it feels like we get a little bit closer to crowds being back present all over the country for sporting events. So let me explain why, and then we'll circle back around to Major League Baseball. So on Monday, New York City opened back up in some way with 400,000 roughly people able to go back to their jobs in New York City. Yesterday, I believe it was, all of it runs together, the state of New Jersey announced that their lockdown was over. It's kind of an abrupt announcement, and everything began to return to the pathway to normalcy in New Jersey. Why does that matter? Well, New York City and the state of New Jersey are two of the hardest hit areas from the coronavirus in the entire country. So their decisions to go back to normalcy there continues a return to normalcy in general. And then NASCAR announced yesterday afternoon that they are going to have fans present, at least in small numbers, this weekend in Florida, and then next weekend in the state of Alabama. So if we've got NASCAR returning to fans, even in a small way, in Florida this weekend and in Alabama next weekend, and then we've got New Jersey coming back, as well as New York City, all of the trend lines are favorable all over the country to a return to normalcy. And as I tweeted out, and I try to continue to give you guys the most recent updates, Tuesday, for those of you who are data nerds that have been paying attention to the coronavirus since this outbreak started, Tuesday is usually the worst day. Tuesday is usually the day when the numbers are the worst, when the death rate is the highest, and all of those aspects are under play. And when you actually look at the data, we had our best Tuesday since March only, and this is always interesting to follow too, we had 432,000 and change tests run, and only 4.2% of all those tests were positive, meaning nearly 96% of all the people being tested for the coronavirus are coming back negative. And also, 18,195 positive cases, which is one of the lowest numbers ever. Now, there also, if you want another positive aspect from the world of sports, there also is increasingly, at least, fewer and fewer cases that are being found over the past several days. But this is significant. The average person gets sick in 4 to 5 days. So right now, at least, we have not seen a spike or a surge in new cases as a result of of the protest surrounding the death of George Floyd. So we haven't seen if all these hundreds of thousands of people are able to come together in close proximity all over the country, and we haven't seen any spike at all in the daily infections, that would suggest, and again, we're still a little bit early in this. We'll have to watch the data basically for the rest of this week to see whether it remains the same and the dates and the positive rates continue to stay roughly the same or not change very much. That would suggest that outdoor events would be more likely to be allowed all over the country because, look, I understand that people want to distinguish in their own lives why this protest and breaking all of the social distancing rules is permissible because this issue is so important or not. The virus doesn't care. The virus is not discriminating in any way based on the proximity of humans and whether it's occurring protesting something or whether it's occurring while everyone sits together and watches a football game or a baseball game. So if you're able to have hundreds of thousands of people protesting, why can't you have less than 100,000 people at a sporting event, at a baseball game or at a football game? I think that is a question that lots of people are going to ask if we don't see any spike in infections as a result of all of these protests. So again, the average incubation period for the coronavirus is 4 to 5 days in most people. And that would suggest that the peak of the protest, which happened, 10 days ago or whatever? I'm not an expert on exactly what day that most people were in the streets, but I think it's fair to say it was certainly more than 4 or 5 days ago, and the numbers continue to trend down now. So we will see whether there is any surge as a result of that those protests. But if there's not, it's even more evidence for why sporting events could occur with fans present. But in the meantime, Major League Baseball is engaged in the slowest process ever in terms of returning to action. And I got to say, I don't think it's very likely at all. I think the ship has sailed on what should have been, at minimum, the return date, which was July 4th. I think there would have been a heck of a celebration across the country if Major League Baseball had been able to get back by July 4th. And now it seems like mid-July is the new target date for when Major League Baseball will eventually be able to work its way back into the rotation of American sports. And in the meantime, I just feel like the players and the owners continue to bicker and go back and forth. And sometimes when it comes to negotiation, I wonder why we can't just get to the result instead of needing to go through all the different dance and rigmarole of going back and forth with a ton of different offers that both sides know are going to be rejected. Why can't we just get to a legitimate negotiation at the beginning instead of continuing this process for whatever it feels like? I mean, it feels like we've been going back and forth in this process now for months with no real progress, and that doesn't make any sense to me at all. Does it feel like Groundhog Day to you, Danny G?
Yeah, because this is exactly how we opened the show yesterday, but talking about a different proposal.
I mean, I guess the positive is they're going back and forth faster with proposals now, and I know there's still a dollar figure difference.
Yeah.
But the most recent player proposal is 89 games, and I believe the most recent owner proposal is what, like 76? So we're at least working towards the point where there's only 13 games difference. Maybe they're going to go game to game. Maybe the owners are going to come back with 80, and then the players are going to come back with 84. The whole thing is just ridiculous.
They've already done a lot of damage, and there's going to be a couple of ridiculous-looking things come July. We're going to see NBA games that probably should have fans in the stands, with your Biodome solution, but 2 months late.
Yep.
And then college mandatory workouts could be happening, and there could be no Major League Baseball on the field. At this point, it's just so frustrating. I mean, I told you this weeks ago, I'm sick of Major League Baseball doing this in front of all of us and dragging their feet and being greedy when the rest of the country is suffering with no paychecks. What were the latest stats for unemployment?
So every Thursday, we get the latest unemployment numbers. And last Thursday, we hit 42 million unemployed. The most recent jobs data in a different report showed that people are starting to go back to work. And yeah. I think if you want to be optimistic, the hope would be as the states end their lockdowns, that tens of millions of people are still going to go back to work because their jobs are still going to exist. So we could have a fairly rapid, the hope would be a fairly rapid return to work for the majority of those people. But, you know, how many people have lost their jobs permanently? I'm afraid the answer is a substantial number.
We should make the MLB owners and players read those stats to each other in a closed door meeting.
No doubt. Here's a question that I have for you guys, and I'm actually going to open up phone lines about this too. 877-996-6369. Would you go to sporting events right now? So I understand that I am in the probably higher level of risk-taking than the average person who's out there. And what I mean by that is I got on an airplane already. I hopped on an airplane, flew down to the beach with my wife, Southwest flight, and I felt completely comfortable doing it. I went to an airport. People who listen to this show know that in the month of May, I went down to the beach in Florida and spent the month of May down at the beach. I was fine going out to restaurants. I was fine going. I mean, I took my kids to Dave and Buster's. I mean, I am returning to normalcy in the best way that I can while not being afraid of the virus and not doing, you know, crazy risks, I don't think. But looking at the data and saying, as a younger person who is relatively healthy at the age of 41 with three young kids who are also healthy, I'm very comfortable with my immediate family going into our normal returns. Now, I'll give you an example. My five-year-old is going to gym class, gymnastics. So my wife has him in gymnastics. That's an indoor event. There's other little kids there. I'm 100% comfortable with my five-year-old going to gymnastics. My kids right now, there are summer camps because my so many people out there who are parents and have had their kids home since March are looking for anything they can do to get their kids out of the house and be able to be entertained. My kids are going to a all-day summer camp right now from 9 to 3 at a venue here in Nashville. It's called Impact. It's fantastic. They do great work with them there. But they do gymnastics. They do taekwondo. They do a lot of different fun things all day for kids to be active and just get them out of the house, right? So I am fine with my kids going with other kids to events. I am fine with getting on an airplane. If there were sporting events going on tomorrow, like let's say that there was an NFL game taking place, I'll say this weekend, or if there was a college football game or there's a Major League Baseball game, I would be 100% comfortable taking my kids and my wife to a sporting event. So my question for everybody out there is, in the OutKick universe, what are your thoughts on this? Would you? So I'll start with you, Danny G. Would you go to a sporting event this weekend? Let's say the Dodgers, you're out in LA. Let's say the Dodgers are playing. Would you go take your girl potentially to a sporting event in LA? Would you go to a Dodgers game this weekend?
Yeah, I would. As long as I had a mask and my hand sanitizer in my front pocket, I'd be good to go.
So your game, Dub, what about you? You're a huge golf fan, for instance. Golf is returning, I believe, tomorrow with the PGA coming back. Would you go to a PGA event? Would you go to an Auburn football game if it was taking place this weekend?
Absolutely, 100%. And speaking of traveling, in a couple weeks here, I'm going to be getting on a plane myself and traveling for one of my buddy's bachelor parties. So
where are you guys going?
We're going to Scottsdale, Arizona, play some golf and sit by the pool, relax. I'm pretty excited about it. But yeah, as this weekend, I would 1,000% be going to an Auburn football game if Auburn was playing.
And this will be the first flight for you that you've been on since the whole coronavirus mess started?
That's correct. Yep. First time traveling really anywhere since this whole thing began.
How are you going to sanitize the strippers?
We haven't gotten that. I think we're going to take a big, big tub of Purell out with us wherever we go.
Are strip clubs open in Arizona? Do we know?
I'm going to, I haven't done all
that's
my research yet.
That's a bachelor party that research. You need to do a pop-up.
They have drive-thrus available.
Yeah. When are you? Yeah, they did have the drive-thru strip club. I saw that. When are you going?
This will be the last weekend of June.
Okay, last weekend of June. Eddie, would you go to a sporting event at this point in time if it were going on this weekend?
Probably not, but I will say I do play in a recreational ice hockey league, and we've not had any games since March, since all this went down. And I did get an email from a teammate that we were going to have like a practice if we wanted to show up and just skate around at the ice rink. And I think I'm going to go on Sunday and take part in that.
So that's a pretty big deal for LA coming back to normalcy, that they're letting people back on the ice skating rink, right? To be able to go play sort of a rec league hockey.
Yeah, they're not having the public skate, so to speak, right, where everyone can show up with their kids and their families. But for specific little groups that can come out and skate around, I guess they're doing that now.
All right, what about you? What about you, Roberto? Would you go to a sporting event this weekend?
Oh, yeah. Dodger Stadium, definitely. I want to take my daughter wherever she wants to go. She really wants... she's got Universal Studios that we would take her, Chuck E. Cheese that we would take her, all those places right now. Dodger Stadium is one of them also. So,
and you know what I'm talking about. Like, if there are a lot of parents out there who have had their kids since March, and since school shut down in March, and we're now coming up on, fairly mid-June.
My wife's at double duty right now, man.
Parents March. I mean, you start talking about March to mid-June and kids not having a lot of things to do. Camps coming back online. The still uncertainty about exactly what the school schedule is going to look like this fall. My opinion is all kids all over the country need to be back in school, because we now know there's enough data that kids are not in particular danger from the coronavirus, and also they're not super spreaders.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Jeff Schwartz joins us now. Schwartz, man, I saw your swimming pool picture that you put out on social media, or I guess it was a video last night. That pool looks pretty big time.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's large. We didn't, realize how big it was going to be until it was obviously made and dug out. But it fits the backyard well, so it's nice. We're going to have a party pool. My wife enjoys a good time, and it's gonna. We have the bar stools in it. It's a shallow on either side, so it's kind of like a sports pool, so you can put like a volleyball net in there or a basketball net. We have two tanning ledges with like umbrellas and chairs. Also, the biggest racket going on right now is pool furniture. Have you ever looked at the price of, like, the chair that you sit on at a resort?
Yeah.
By the pool?
Yeah.
Do you know how much those things cost?
No earthly idea.
They're at minimum, for anything nice, $500.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That's a lot more than I would have thought.
It's ridiculous, and so we're gonna it's a long project, but I'm glad we got at least the water, and there's still some stuff to finish up. But we're gonna have a good time with it. We're doing a little bar area and stuff right now, so we'll have fun with them. Glad we got it done. The kids love it, of course.
Yeah, there are always things when you add that cost way more than you think they should. So, for instance, when you buy a home, window treatments are insane. I think we've talked about this before. Like, I understand what the house costs, condo, whatever else, and like you budget out for that. And then there are things that you end up having to buy that you just resent for the rest of your life. I didn't know pool, chairs and everything else around it. I didn't even think about what that would cost, because you're like, I don't know. I mean, I know that a pool's not cheap. So whatever you spend on the pool, what's a pool cost, by the way, ballpark? Like, your pool's really nice, but is that like a $60,000 purchase? Like, what's a pool cost roughly?
So the pool itself, like, just like to do the pool, because you kind of have two different prices, right? Pool price, then like landscaping price.
Yeah.
So the pool is probably like $90,000.
Okay. So, I mean, that's pretty expensive, but at least
it's a giant pool boat.
Yeah. And also, that's like, okay, a nice SUV now is what, like 60 grand, 70 grand. So, basically if you're putting a pool in, it's around the, at least ballpark for what a really nice car would cost, right? Okay, so you can at least understand that. But then all the accoutrements, like the landscaping and like you're talking about all the different pool aspects there, that adds a bunch to it too. And that's like for the house, you might be like, okay, I can afford to spend, you know, let's say $300,000 for this house. And you're like, okay, that sounds awesome. And then you're like, wait a minute, we spent $300,000 for the house, but now we got to furnish it. And you're like, okay, I kind of maybe thought about that. But the one that always gets me is the idea of having to go with the window treatments. It's just different level, drives me insane.
The window treatments is like the drapes, right? And the curtains.
Yes.
Like
yeah. That cost infinitely more, or the plantation shutters or whatever you call it. That cost infinitely more than you ever believed was possible.
And then blackout curtains are just ridiculously expensive. Like for some reason, it just, and my wife, everything we basically do is, we kind of stop the custom made stuff. I'm not playing anymore, but like everything has a certain price. And it's, I'll tell you the most ridiculous thing on the pool so far for pricing. So we have those four little fixtures in the back on the wall that like return the water, right? Kind of like water features.
Yeah.
Four of them cost $2,000.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Like, I didn't even realize, like, that's how much they cost. Like, they're just copper. Like, I felt them. They're like, and I was like, how can these things, they're a foot long, cost that much money? Like, this is ridiculous to me. And you're right about the house, though. You buy a house, and all of a sudden, it's all these additional costs. It's just wild. But that's part of, you know, ownership of a house, or now with the pool, which, I get it. There's no return on investment.
Yeah.
People think that you put in pools and increases the value of your house. It does not. I'm fine with that. It's for us, and we built this house. We're not going anywhere.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. By the way, things haven't gone wrong yet. The amount of money you'll end up spending to heat the pool and for something to break on the pool and everything else. But in the meantime, enjoy it. All right. So speaking of enjoy it, everybody's talking about the NFL coming back in June, and that for the regular season does make some sense. But I wrote about this on Friday, and we were talking about it with part of Eddie Garcia's update. The NFL first preseason game is August 6th. What do you think the NFL is going to do about preseason football? Because that's just 9 weeks away.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to make all of it work. And the way I look at some of the protocols that were put into place the other day, at least the potential protocols, because the PA, I don't think, has agreed to all of it quite yet, at least according to their president on Twitter, is I think it's easier to put in a bunch of physical distancing guidelines now, and then as the data changes, we've seen now new reports come out the last couple of days that have kind of changed the way we might look at asymptomatic carriers, things like that. As things change, you can peel away some of the layers, right? Okay, we're not going to do the physical distancing in the meeting rooms now. We're not going to do it in the locker rooms. It's easier to do that than go the opposite direction and be like, okay, we have 1 week till camp, make all the changes that we have to make now. So I think that's the way the NFL its approaches. And I think they want to play as many games as they can. The Hall of Fame game is August 6th. The Hall of Fame, I believe I saw today, Schefter tweet out, is open again in Ohio. And so I think they're trying to play as much as they can. They might not have many fans there. Maybe they limit it in that direction. But we've seen so much change each week. Every day, more states are allowing fans in the stands. More states are opening up. I just think the things change so fast, it's really hard to predict how it will be. And I do think that they're going to play as many preseason games as they can. And maybe the Hall of Fame game gets canned because, they don't really have the protocols in place to play that game. But I really don't think much else is going to be stopped right now.
How do you think NFL training camp is going to look? So you've been to a lot of NFL training camps before. How will it be different this year? Because, again, we're not that far from teams starting to report back to the facility, and they haven't been there for a long time. But you're talking about 90-some-odd guys, that are on the training camp roster. We know that they're not going to be able to travel and scrimmage against each other. Cuts have to be made. You think the preseason will exist completely normally is your prediction right now. Let me start with that. So you're saying, like, hey, guys like me who have NFL preseason tickets will be able to use those tickets, the season tickets, to go watch a preseason football game just like normal would be your prediction.
I think so. There are a lot of logistical problems with holding training camp in your facility if you're not ready for it. So I played on three teams, actually, that still go away to training camp. The Panthers go to Wofford College. The Vikings go to Mankato State. And then the Chiefs go to Missouri Western, St. Joe's, about an hour and a half north of the city. And so, those facilities are set up for what you would want, because their college facilities and college locker rooms are huge, because colleges have 100 players year-round in their facility. The NFL locker room is for 60 guys, right? It's more like 65, 70, right? So you have your 53 active guys. I think now you have 10 practice squad guys, and of course there's guys that are hurt. So maybe it's set up for 75 lockers, all right? Well, they need 90 now for training camp. And that doesn't include, by the way, guys that go on IR and they bring someone else in. So let's say you need 100 lockers. So there are teams that bring in lockers, like temporary lockers, to just make it work for training camp. But they don't want them there, I think, for the regular season. They're not big locker rooms, guys. I think you'd be surprised to find out the Chiefs, for example, just won the Super Bowl. They just have a simple locker room. They have wood lockers. They have benches. Like, it's not like anything that you'd be like, wow, this is where the world champions are at. Now, the facility's nice. I mean, it's an NFL facility. But NFL, they're not set up for that way. I mean, they're not set up to, like, have – you know, meeting rooms and everyone's 6 feet apart. They have tiny meeting rooms. There's only three quarterbacks. How big of a room do you need for the quarterback room? So the idea that there's just going to be all this room to do these meetings and make sure that everyone is safe and social distancing. I mean, just also just the amount of people for training camp. You just have more people. You have interns. You have interns in the equipment room. You have interns in the training room. You have interns. You have intern coaches. Like, training camp is a huge ordeal. And to do it at home now, if you're not used to doing that, a lot of people just don't have the space, the physical space, to house all these people. So I'm really curious. And look, don't make it work, obviously. But when you add in the social distancing guidelines, it makes it a lot tougher. If everyone's allowed to be crammed into the locker room, yeah, that works out fine. But if you just stay 6 feet apart from each other, I don't know how it works. I could say, hey, you know, maybe turn your indoor into some sort of physical distancing locker room, but then you have to use your indoor to practice when the weather's bad sometimes. So it's like one of those things where I don't know how you accomplish all this. Maybe you set up some tents. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. So while the guidelines make sense from just, you know, safety precaution, practical, I don't know how they apply.
And for your point, for people who may not realize, you have to be located for training camp now at your facility as opposed to going remote. And they're not going to allow some of these intra-squad meetups, which sometimes happen, you know, to kind of kill the monotony of training camp, where you get to go against somebody other than your opponent, you know, your own team, your opposing side of the ball. That's not going to be allowed either, which arguably, you could speak to this better than me, Schwartz, but would mean that that arguably preseason football games are going to matter more in terms of evaluation than they might ordinarily, because you're not going to have the preseason camps and you're not going to have the ability to bring in other guys and have them go against your guys.
Yeah, so the joint practices are what you're talking about. And those happen, you know, so let's say the Panthers visit the Titans for the preseason. You know, they go 4 days early, and then you practice against each other for 2 days, and then you have the day off before the game, and then you play the game. So a lot of people have used that, especially like the Patriots. They love doing it because it gives them an opportunity to evaluate their players against someone else. So I've always been of the opinion that, you know, the roster is 53 guys. It might go to 55 in the new CBA. I'm not quite sure, but let's say it's 53 still. I mean, I'm fairly certain that 47 of those spots are already spoken for before camp even begins, based off of salary, based off of draft pick, whatever it is, they're pretty much set. So you're just looking to find, you know, six guys out of probably 10 or 12 of a pool of guys that you think are going to make the team. So competition is not, I think, as fever pitch as we think it is. I think it's kind of like this myth of competition, and it sounds great, but there really is not a lot of it. So yes, anytime that you can't evaluate those kind of 12 guys against quote-unquote live reps against a different team, especially during special teams periods, it will hurt the evaluation. But maybe guys will end up having to play a little bit more in the preseason. Now, we know that next year, I think the preseason schedule changes to 3 games instead of 4. But, yeah, so maybe we'll see that as well. Also, one thing, this is a very technical thing to consider for training camp this year, is that because there was no offseason program, the veterans are going to get more reps in training camp this year to get them ready to play, because the end goal, obviously, is to get ready to play season. And I think we're going to see it really tough this year for undrafted free agent guys and lower-round draft picks to really make the team, because they're not going to get a lot of reps this camp. And I think we're going to see a lot of teams either cut those guys, and then I think there's a lot of street free agents right now that might be signed, veteran guys that teams can just count on. They know what they're doing. We'll have them on our team this year because we can't trust the young guys yet.
What's going to happen? Are we going back in time to the 2016 and 2017 NFL season when ratings dropped by 20% because of the intersection of the politics and election season and everything else? Or do you think this story around Drew Brees and the NFL and social justice and everything else will fade between now and the season?
Well, unless another tragedy unfolds or there's another issue to deal with, it probably fades a little bit. I do think players will kneel. But remember this, is that networks also decided in 2018, we're just not going to show it anymore. Players knelt last year. Eric Reed did, Kenny Stills. Players were still kneeling last year. Players were kneeling in 2018. Wasn't as many, but the TV networks just stopped showing it, and they stopped paying so much attention to it. Now, this year, I would imagine early in the season, there'll be some attention paid to it, but they're still doing it. The players have been doing it. It's kind of funny to see people say, like, I'm not watching again because they're kneeling. Well, you've been watching while they've been kneeling anyway. You just didn't know it. And so I do think that TV networks will decide possibly to not show it as much because they get hurt too if people don't watch their TV. So there's ways around making it a focal point of your telecast. But I do think the NFL follows the money. And I think the NFL is seeing, at least right now, that aligning with the players and allowing them to protest and take a knee is the right call. Now, they might change their mind in September. They might, you know, when August comes, they might come out with a new guideline. Who knows? But I think right now, that's what they're doing. And I don't know if we're going to see a 20% drop if they do show it. I'm kind of curious about it because it feels like, and social media, of course, is not really accurate of the world per se. But I do think it feels like there's a shift maybe. I'm curious to see. But I think the NFL is always looks at the money, and I really think that they think like this is the right side to be on right now. Because like they would, if they thought they were going to lose a money play again, a lot of money again, I don't think Goodell makes that video. I really don't.
So it's an interesting question. Let me ask you this: does Roger Goodell endorsing protest make them infinitely less cool? And what I mean by that is
no.
Just think about this. Usually the people who are rebels and want to protest, one of the reasons why they do it is because the quote-unquote man doesn't approve. And the analogy I used was, like, think about hippies back in the day in the 1960s opposed to Vietnam War. They grew out their hair really long. The peace sign turned into a big deal. And then kind of the protest ends up not being that controversial. And long hair is, like, not really a story anymore. Sorority girls everywhere, like, posing in photos, throw up the peace sign, and it doesn't really mean very much. When Roger Goodell is kneeling, like, let's say he's doing it, and he throws up the Black Power hand signal, are people going to be like, oh, this is badass? Or are they going to be like, this is like grandma joining Facebook, I got to go somewhere new?
I mean, it appears the NFL players very much, you know, wanted approval of the NFL to do this.
I understand. But when you get that approval, it's like, you know, I always say, if you have a teenager and you genuinely don't like the person that they're dating, sometimes the worst thing you can do is let that teenager know that you hate their boyfriend or girlfriend because it makes them want to rebel and do it more. I wonder on some level whether Roger Goodell, who represents the corporate mainstream as much as anything, like whether his endorsement actually ends up being like a sign that the protest isn't as necessary, because if the man is endorsing it, it's like, man, we got to go to Snapchat. It's like when grandma got on Facebook, you're like, I'm not on Facebook anymore. I'm going to Snapchat. I'm going to Instagram. I'm going to TikTok or whatever the hell it is. I can't even keep up with all this stuff. Is that possible with the NFL?
I mean, it's certainly possible. I don't know if that's what Goodell was thinking when he put the video
together. I don't think he's thinking it. Just like grandma's not thinking. I'm going to drive my kids off Facebook by signing up for it. But, you know, when old people start to like something, usually young people are like, right, yeah, I'm not into this anymore.
I didn't think about that. I mean, it's definitely possible. I just think time will be what, you know, might calm this down. I know Adrian Peterson is one of the players who said, I'm going to kneel no matter what. You know, I don't really care about, you know, between now and the season. And that's definitely, I believe him. But I think it's more time. I don't think Goodell saying that is really going to do very much to dissuade players from from taking a knee who want to take a knee. I just think that obviously the support is what they were looking for from the NFL. Now, I don't know what more support, you know, there's a question, obviously, like, you know, what should the NFL do now? Like, what's the next thing to do? And, you know, everyone has said sign Colin Kaepernick. It kind of feels like insulting just to sign him to sign him. I mean, I don't think he really wants it anyway. He doesn't want to be signed just to sign him. And there also is liability. I mean, there's clearly a reason why, you know, Goodell didn't mention his name because he could sue him again, I believe.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
I hope all of you are having a good start to your Wednesdays. I got to be careful every day when we do the what day are we, you know, start off the top of the hour, because there's such a Groundhog Day quality to the last several months. You know, it's not like we've got usual kind of markers of what day of the week it is. I don't think I've gotten it wrong too many times, but in the back of my head, I'm like, wait a minute. I panicked there for a minute. I'm like, what day is it? And I hope all of you are having a good Wednesday. It does feel like Groundhog Day because Major League Baseball continues to go back and forth. The latest proposal from the players, 89 games. The latest proposal from the owner, 76 games. I was hopeful that we were going to have Major League Baseball back by July 4th because, as you just heard Jeff Schwartz saying, it would have been a great Stars and Stripes laden July 4th. I think many parts of this country are going to be back to normal by July 4th. And I think there will be a great desire for celebration, for just good news, for good times on July 4th. We saw it a little bit with Memorial Day, with people coming back out into circulation and returning to normalcy. The state of New Jersey announcing that its lockdown is over. You certainly have the New York City people going back to work. NASCAR came out yesterday and announced there are going to be fans present in Homestead, Florida this weekend and also in Alabama next weekend. Continuing good news coming in general from the coronavirus numbers, which have not skyrocketed, at least not so far, from the protest. And if you are able to look at the data from the protest and say, okay, wow, we had hundreds of thousands of people in close proximity to one another in those protests, and we didn't see a massive spike in overall infection rates for the coronavirus, if that occurs, then why couldn't we also have people able to go to sporting events this summer and fall? And whether it's Major League Baseball or whether it's the NFL or college football, if you're outdoors in close proximity to people, the virus is not going to notice the difference between whether somebody's there to protest something that is unjust in society or whether they're there to root against or root for a particular football team. And so whatever precedent comes out of these protests in terms of viral infection rates, I think it goes a long way towards giving us some clue how outdoor stadiums might be able to do with big crowds as well. And remember, based on all the data that's out there, the average, now it can take longer than this, but the average amount of time from somebody being exposed to the coronavirus to them being able to test positive, the incubation period, as it were, is 4 to 5 days. So if you're thinking about 4 to 5 days, that means we're basically back today for the average person being tested who would have been protesting on Saturday or Sunday. So look, everybody out there across the country, as you listen to me, go get yourself tested if you're nervous. Certainly if you were active socially in big crowds, there's no harm in going to get yourself tested to see whether you may be asymptomatic or not. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has put out conflicting data about exactly how transmissible infectious someone is when they are asymptomatic. They said earlier this week it was very rare. Now they say it can happen sometimes. It's just a mess in terms of the data, even months after we should have better data than we do. But the positive is the overall infection rate in the country continues to decline. Yesterday, we had one of the lowest rates of positive tests that we have ever seen in this country, 4.2%. Tuesdays tend to be a big day for data drop, because a lot of people don't get all the numbers in from Saturday and Sunday. And so they get back to work, and Tuesday tends to be the biggest spikes of the week. And we had the lowest Tuesday spike since March, which suggests, fingers crossed, that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the trend lines may continue to get better. And if that's the case, again, I would like to think we can continue to move more and more towards the idea of not just having sports, but having sports with crowds present. So that is where we are headed. Want to give props to NASCAR for bringing back sports. Also, want to give props to college football for getting something right around Reggie Bush, his disassociation from the University of Southern California coming to a close, according to reports. That is a good trend line as well. All of that is moving in a very positive direction as all of that is continuing. All right, so that is the data points there. Now, we have had, for OutKick, massive growth in this show. There are probably a lot of you out there listening to me right now who weren't listening to me back in March. You may not have even heard of me or this show. We have seen skyrocketing growth in terms of this show and all of OutKick properties in general since March, because I believe there's a huge demand out there for reasonableness in an unreasonable time and for facts in an emotional, fact-less environment, which we often find ourselves in media. And I know this because I've seen the data, but our audience has skyrocketed. Why has it skyrocketed? I think because a lot of you respect the fact that while you may not agree with me, you trust me. And that means a lot to me. I don't expect for all of us to agree on this show. There's tons of millions of people now every single week and every single month who consume OutKick content, whether it's reading our website, whether it's watching our videos, whether it is listening to this program, downloading the podcast. I mean, millions every month are now a part of our audience. And so I don't expect all of you to agree with me on every single issue. It would be a really boring world if you agreed with my opinion on everything. And frankly, it would also be a sign that you're not thinking very deeply if you agree with me on everything. But I do think this audience out there trusts me. And I believe that you know that I'm being as honest as I possibly can with you every single day about the way I'm living my life in this coronavirus era and about just sharing facts with you. As I've been saying on this program for several weeks now, everyone is entitled to their own opinion. Everyone is not entitled to their own facts. And so I'm going to get the facts right on this show. And you can agree or disagree with my opinions, but they're going to be rooted in factual accuracy. So a big part of our show growth has been explosive growth in our podcast. We set a new record in May for downloads. We set a new record in June. And these are impressive because the average podcast audience and the average sports audience in general has vanished. As there has been no sports, ours has surged. So it's not just that we're growing. It's that we're growing while everybody else is losing audience. And I imagine a lot of you are going to stay around because as sports comes back, we're going to have more and more fun to be able to talk about college football and the NFL. Hopefully one day the return of baseball, the return of the NBA at the end of July. And so I have said, hey, if you can go give us a rating, and I'll reiterate this again, if you are a podcast subscriber and you are listening to this right now and you go give us a 5-star review, Danny G is on Read the Reviews and Find the Best. That's one of his new jobs. And so I believe, Danny G, you have several different podcast reviews. And what we're doing is, if we read your podcast review, all right, if we read your podcast review live on the radio, or if you hear it while listening on the podcast, you will get an autographed copy of my book. So that is what we are doing, all right? So I don't choose them. I'm not involved in making the choices about which the best ones are. But if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, just go search out OutKick, go search out Clay Travis, and Danny G decides that they're smart, they're funny, he likes yours the most. And we're gonna start reading some of these on the program. And if you hear your review, you get an autographed copy of my most recent book. So with that in mind, Danny G, what you got for me?
All right, so I got the top five. There were
dozens. How many of them are there out there, the five-star reviews?
Too many to count. I read through about 100 of them last night.
Okay, so thank you to everybody who went and gave us reviews. Danny G has decided these are the five best. We're going to continue to review these, and as we pull them, if you hear yours read, then we'll give you an autographed copy of a book. All right.
All right. The first one, Doug in Nashville. He says, the title he gave it, More Contagious Than Coronavirus. This morning when I stepped out of my safe room, the first thing I did was thank God. Can I say God? For sparing my life from coronavirus. The second thing I did was write this review. Since my April 1 lockdown, I've been quarantined in an 8x8 room with my only contact to the outside world being the Outkick the Coverage podcast. It saved me. As I tried to emotionally come to grips with a high probability of dying within 5 minutes if I don't wear a mask when going to Whole Foods, I can take comfort knowing that Clay Travis in this podcast is now my navigational beacon for sensibility moving forward. It is a must listen. Hashtag outkick the corona. Doug in Tennessee.
All right, so Doug, that's a solid 5-star review. So he gets an autographed copy of the book. All right, who's up next?
All right, Niner Girl is up next. She titled this First Amendment, Boobs, and Outkick. Every morning as I brush my teeth and listen to the logical musings of one of the most fair and authentic minds on any platform, I think of how lucky his wife is and how on earth
she
snatched such a trophy as Clay Travis.
I like this review. This is a fantastic review.
To be able to converse with someone so honest and clear-minded that can articulate truths and facts with the balls the size of an elephant would be absolutely satisfying to my soul. I mean, he is every definition of a man in my book, besides the fact that he's deathly afraid of snakes and isn't that fortunate looking.
Isn't that fortunate yes. looking? That's the most insult. Like,
you still love this review?
I liked it until she said I was basically ugly.
But in my mind, if he looked like what he sounds like, he is Jimmy G to me.
All right, if he looks like what he sounded like, I'm a solid 7. I'm a 7 out of 10.
According to you.
According to me. I might be a 7.5 on a good day.
All right, Niner Girl, good job there. Now,
that's pretty funny.
We'll go to C. Jones out of Oklahoma. His title, Business in the Front, Party in the Back. This show is like if logic met facts at a bar in the South on a Saturday night after a college football game and impressed her with witty banter, law school bravado, and Bachelor TV references.
Yeah.
They later went on to conceive a child that grew up to be an MMA fighter, pummeling emotional thinkers and social justice warriors, while also maintaining an amateur stand-up comedy routine on the side. So basically, any red-blooded American after a few beers, if you like who you are after a few beers, you'll enjoy this show. C. Jones, Oklahoma.
Solid. So that's 3 5-star reviews. All right. So all those people get autographed copies of the book.
All right. Next one here. DWH doesn't say what state. The Sultan of Truth. Are you so woke that the only friends you have are on Twitter? Do you spend your days guzzling energy drinks and searching for the latest outrage? Are you a cookie puss willow who can't handle the truth? If so, then beat it, Brozilla. Keep walking, Karen. Clay Travis deals out facts and truth like magic used to deal out assists. He's a lighthouse of truth instead of a beacon of BS. Most of the sports media these days are nothing but PC pukers. They're too afraid to speak their minds as they sip their herbal tea and nibble on their avocado toast. Do yourself a favor and start listening to this podcast. Your wife just might start sleeping with you again.
Very solid. I have to say this. Avocado toast is pretty good. I know everybody's making fun of the millennials and they like the fact that, and by the way, I miss being a millennial by like 8 months. That's why I'm so tough. But I got to tell you, the avocado toast is pretty good. I don't want to sound like a diva here, but my nanny who comes to the house, she's a millennial. She started making avocado toast and I was like, maybe I'll try this avocado toast. It's really, really good. Did I just kill all my tough man bona fides by just saying my nanny made avocado toast for me?
Well, at least you didn't pay $20 for it at a cafe in Los Angeles.
Well, that's true. But it is pretty good. It is underrated, this avocado toast. That's one thing the millennials have gotten right.
All right. And the 5-star winner. The fifth winner here, Jay Brown. His title, Not Gonna Lie, Here for the Prize Pack. Outkick has to be, by and large, the best sports talk show on the air. Whether I agree or disagree with Clay's opinions, I can respect the fact that, by and large, he keeps saying by and large, I think he's mocking you, his opinions are based on facts rather than emotions. I like to listen to the show on full volume at work and watch Rick, the extreme liberal, clench his jaw and fight back tears. It's almost as satisfying, by and large, as the First Amendment and boobs. Screw you, Rick. Anyway, if you don't listen to this show, you look stupid as you look, like Josh in Virginia. Do yourself a favor, listen live or catch the podcast, and you might learn some things. Keep up the good work, Clay and the Outkick staff. Love the show. Stuff like this happens, bro.
That's pretty outstanding. That's a lot of references to things that have been said on the show. So those are the 5-star reviews. So if you heard your review either live on the radio or on podcast, what should they do? Should they email you?
Yeah, go ahead and DM me on Twitter at Danny G Radio. And if I'm not following you, just send me a quick message letting me know I read one of your reviews. I'll follow you back. That way we can DM and I'll get your address and we'll get a prize package out to you.
Awesome. And so that is now out there. Danny G is on Review Beat. And so periodically we're going to read some of these 5-star reviews. And if we like them and you get selected, then you get an awesome prize pack. So good job by Danny G. Thanks to everybody who has sent in the reviews. Just because yours didn't get read today doesn't mean it's not going to get read. And we appreciate all of you for following the show and continuing to lead us into such massive and rapid growth. That's because of you guys and the word that you spread. And by the way, if you're listening right now and you hate me, go ahead and tell everybody that you hate me as well, because that's the best free advertising I can get. Also, if you love me, tell your friends. But people who hate me, really, I vastly appreciate owning your brains such that you're talking about me all the time and also helping us grow.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Chris Mannix with us at SI Chris Mannix on Twitter. You can find him there. We are rolling on the program. Chris, we at least have a return date, July 31st, but I feel a little bit like the NBA is implementing an April plan in basically August. Does it feel a little strange that they're basically implementing a quarantine procedure as the rest of the country is opening up?
Well, you just don't want to see, you know, a widespread infection inside that campus bubble, whatever you call it, that threatens the integrity of the playoffs. And I've said this over and over again. The most important thing to Adam Silver right now is to have the end result of this postseason crown what is viewed as a legitimate champion. And to some people, that's impossible. You know, some people will view this as a new thing and you really can't have a legit champion come out of this. But, you know, Adam Silver wants to at least have the mechanics in place and the system in place where you can at least credibly call it that. And that's why they're doing, you know, best of seven in the first round. That's why they're taking, you know, extreme precautions to make sure that as few people, players, coaches, staffers, whatever involved, contract the coronavirus.
Do you know what this will be like? Let's talk about, for instance, somebody like you who covers the NBA. Will you be able to go watch these games in person? Will they call the games in person? What will the protocol, so far as you know, for these games actually look like?
Yeah, and I've been keeping up to date on that, and I can tell you it's still very much being worked out. I think it's certainly possible you could have, you know, tiers of coverage where you could have some people that are quarantined the entire time inside the bubble. You know, those people would have to be there effectively if they wanted to say the duration effectively from early mid-July to, you know, maybe mid-October. And then others who could operate outside it. But I'm guessing that if you operate outside it, there's almost no point in going down there. I mean, you're not going to get any kind of enhanced access. You know, what's the point of doing it? You know, it's probably just easy to do it from home. So I think what needs to be figured out is just how much of a commitment and how quarantined you have to be to cover it on the inside and still be able to get the one-on-ones and, you know, be involved in scrums and walk and talks, all the things that reporters do to try to get, you know, a little bit something more distinctness out of their coverage. So that's the kind of stuff that I know that I know for a fact has not been decided yet.
So the other thing is, and I'm kind of wondering, when you watch these games on July 31st, the NBA games have a certain rhythm to them in terms of the way they start, right? Like, hey, you know, and certainly the most legendary version that kind of put this into the stratosphere was the way the Chicago Bulls would introduce their team. Are we going to have, like, player introductions and things like that with no crowds present? Because it might make sense on TV, but it also would feel a little bit ridiculous when there's no crowds there. How does that process work in your mind?
I think there will be some form of player introduction. There will not be the bells and whistles that come with traditional player introductions. I think the closest comparison you could make is the summer leagues. And, you know, summer leagues have fans in the stands, especially in Las Vegas, but not a lot, and certainly not vocal, you know, considering that most fans don't know who those players are that are being introduced. But they are sort of boilerplate introductions where guys walk out. Some of them don't even walk out when they're introduced. But for television purposes, you know, they do these introductions, and they're very run-of-the-mill and very kind of matter-of-fact, and they just kind of get them over with. I would imagine, and I think it's going to happen, that that's how players are introduced. It may feel weird to them, but it's almost a necessary evil to make it part of a television broadcast.
Talking to Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, do you think that there is a possibility that as the season playoffs progress, that the NBA could say, hey, we're going back to the home arenas for the conference finals or the NBA finals? Or do you think July 31st all the way till October 12th, if necessary, everything takes place in Orlando?
Yeah, I think they're locked in to this plan and to have everything take place. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where they would do it. It's just as simple as, even though we are starting to open up nationwide, you know, states are doing it on a different level. They're doing it at different speeds, and they're allowing different things. And, you know, the NBA, I don't think they want to get into a situation where, you know, let's say it's the Lakers and Bucks, and Milwaukee's more open than Los Angeles, Wisconsin more open than California, whatever, and it becomes somewhat problematic. I think they want to simplify this as much as possible and just try to complete it down there.
What does this look like? They finish October 12th at the latest. What happens for the next season in the NBA? How is that process playing out, and what do you think that might look like? Because it'll happen pretty quick, I think.
Yeah, it's still up for discussion at the moment, because the NBA's original plan was to resume or pick up the next season on December 1st. That has been met with significant pushback from the players' union, which understandably is not all that keen on having a couple of teams, you know, maybe finish October 12th and report for training camp like November 12th or whatever it is. So the union has pushed back on that. But, you know, the Atlanta Hawks general manager had a conference call with reporters just yesterday where he said that the league would like to find a way to get back to its regular schedule after next season. That means condensing things a little bit, you know, having more back-to-backs, try to finish your season sometime in mid to late June. I don't really understand that. I don't understand why the NBA is not looking at this as an opportunity.
I agree.
To see what summer basketball looks like. I mean, it's just, look, even if you go into next August, you can still come back in you know, mid-November, late November, early December, and fix things the 2021-2022 season. You know, why not use this as an opportunity to try to, you know, collect some valuable data and see if summer basketball works? I mean, there just seems to be an overriding faction within the league office that it just really wants to get back on schedule. And, you know, I haven't talked to Adam Silver about it yet, but that's going to be one of the first questions that comes up. But why is the league so intent on getting back on a regular schedule?
It's a great question. Okay, let's go to the actual games itself. And we're talking to Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix. Who benefits from this situation? There's no travel. There's no crowds. There is no real precedent for ever playing a championship tournament, which effectively is what the playoffs is, like this. Who do you think benefits? Right now, Vegas would tell you that the Bucks and the Lakers are the most likely to meet in the NBA Finals. Do you agree, or is there somebody out there or a team or a group that you think is more benefited by this than others?
You know, with the understanding that we have no idea until we see what what these teams, these players look like when they get back. If I'm a gambler, I'm putting all my money on the Philadelphia 76ers.
Really?
Because, look, if you assume certain things about what these playoffs are going to look like and what skills are going to come back faster, you assume that three-point shooting is going to be a problem. Like, teams that shoot threes, I can't see players getting back into mid-season form after having 4 months off in just a couple of weeks. I just can't see it. So you look at the Sixers, they don't shoot threes. They stink at them. Like, that's one of their Achilles heels. So if they're not shooting threes, they're not as significantly affected. Moreover, they are a high-level defensive team that is going to have Ben Simmons back. So they're going to be playing great defense. And if these games get bogged down in, like, the 90 to 87, 95, 91, that benefits a team like Philadelphia. I mean, they've got arguably the best low-post player in the entire postseason, Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons can play through the post in the playoffs. I mean, if you take three-pointing off the table and say it's got to be more of a slugfest on the inside, there's one team that benefits, and that's Philadelphia. So I don't know what their odds are going to be, but if it's a high number, I'm putting some money on them.
I'm going to look it up during your answer to the next question, because that's a really fascinating answer. I haven't heard anybody jump in as aggressively on the Sixers, but I can see your argument there. Another thing that I would think would factor in here in a big way is how well these teams get along. And what I mean by that is, if you're in a normal environment where you can go back to your apartment or your condo or your house and just chill, then things are a lot different, even if you don't necessarily get along with all your coworkers. But when everybody's staying in the same hotel and everybody is eating meals together a lot, and you're basically, it's basically a three-month road trip. For teams that have good chemistry, it can be great. For teams that don't like each other very much, they may not be able to escape and get kind of their personal space. That could factor in a big way here as well, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that argument would take Philadelphia out of the equation.
Like, that's what I was going to say. By the way, they are 20-1 right now. For people out there who are curious, the Bucks, this is according to Fox Bet this morning, the Bucks and the Lakers are both 2.5-1 as the favorite. The Clippers, and I'm going to ask you about them in a second here, Chris, are 3-1. Houston Rockets 16-1. Celtics 18-1. Raptors 20-1. 76ers 20-1. Then the Nuggets are 22-1. That's the top eight. The Heat, the Jazz are 30-1. That would be the top 10.
I put money on the back end of those picks. I mean,
think there's value on the non-prime time teams?
I think there's huge value. But to your point about players having to like each other, it's well taken. I would say one of the counters would be that they're not on planes together. They're not on buses together. They're not.
It's less stressful in terms of travel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they do have to. And I'm also curious, like, I don't know the exact parameters of the bubble yet. Like, how big is it? How much movement can players do? And again, how many family members can players have down there? That's important, too. I mean, if they're allowed to have, X numbers of families and friends that they can hang out with in that bubble, that's a game changer as well. So that wouldn't put them in that position where the only people they could hang out with are players, coaches, and staffers. Also, by the way, how much golf do they like to play?
Yeah.
I can't tell you. I've talked to GMs that are like, I hate Florida. I don't want to play golf. I don't like playing golf. I don't like doing anything. What am I going to do down there? There are stress-releasing activities that some people might like doing down there, and others, well, they might prefer the stress release of Las Vegas.
Well, yeah, though, look, I was talking with you, and I know you don't have kids, but I've got three. So I've got a 12, a 9, and a 5-year-old. If I told my wife, hey, we're getting relocated to Disney World, my kids, and they heard that, would be ecstatic. But my understanding is the players and their families are not allowed to go to Disney World. Like, they're supposed to stay in this bubble in some way. And so even that can be kind of claustrophobic, because I don't know how long you've spent in a hotel for the longest period, Chris, in your career. But I've spent a lot of time, for instance, traveling to do Fox Television. And you stay in a hotel for a couple of weeks, even if you're able to get out and about, you're like, man, this kind of feels, there's a lot of Groundhog Day qualities to it, and it can kind of get old, right? Like, even though, and I'm not a guy who dislikes hotels, but just staying in one room can kind of get old after a while.
Oh, it gets very old. I mean, the longest stretch I think I've done, besides, I guess, Olympic coverage, which is significant itself, but I remember early in my career, I would spend I would go to Vegas for summer league, and I would stay for USA Basketball, and that would be 3.5-4 weeks. And,
oh wow!
I mean, you start to become a long time in Vegas. Yeah, you start to become real tight with your mini bar if you don't want to go out. I mean, it's just it's a lot. And one of the things I think is under consideration is if families want to leave the campus, and I guess players could do it too, but they'd be under the same rules. But if families want to leave the campus, if they want to come back, they'd be quarantined somewhere for X number of days.
Yeah.
And obviously that's something players can't do, but I believe a family could do it if they wanted to go hit Disney World for a day.
Yeah, okay. Now let's go back to what seemed like it was going to be the Battle of Los Angeles in L.A. Now we're going to potentially get the Battle of Los Angeles, depending on how things go down, between the Clippers and the Lakers, except all the way across the country with no fans present at Disney World in Orlando. Who does that favor? Like, if you were just looking, let's pretend the Clippers and the Lakers are going to match up. Who is favored? To me, it has to be the Clippers because they were never going to have a home court advantage in L.A. And now, you know, they may have the better roster, and they don't have to worry at all about there being 20,000 people rooting against them for Laker games and even, you know, 12,000 rooting against them for Clipper home games.
Yeah, I think that's very fair assessment. You know, for two reasons. One is that you're right. I mean, a seven-game series with the Clippers and Lakers would be all home for the Lakers. I've been to a bunch of those games in the last couple of years between the Clippers and Lakers. You know, Lakers fans outnumber the Clippers on the, quote, road, you know, probably 75-25. It's wild being in those buildings. And the other thing is that, look, if you're looking at guys that benefit from this break, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's one of them. I mean, Kawhi has got that nagging knee injury, and assuming he's able to stay in condition, you know, him having that time off is going to be beneficial. Paul George been banged up with a number of injuries. That's going to be beneficial. The Lakers, as we, you know, it feels like a lifetime ago, but when they finished, they were clicking. Like, they were playing their best basketball of the season when things shut down. Beat the Bucks, beat the Clippers, just rolling at that time. I mean, it's going to be more of a challenge, I think, for them to regain that momentum than for the Clippers, who I think will, you know, come back probably feeling a little bit better about their stars having to play every other day in a postseason.
How close, if at all, did Kevin Durant come to returning?
I don't think he came close at all. You know, one of the things, and this goes back to when, you know, Kenny Atkinson was the coach, and I'd ask, you know, people in that organization pretty regularly, you know, is Kevin Durant coming back? And they always kept the door open because they didn't want to speak for Kevin Durant. And I don't think Kevin Durant wanted to officially rule himself out because I don't think he saw any upside to ruling himself out. But there was, I mean, the history of that injury where, I mean, if you look at the guys that have had it, you know, going back to DeMarcus Cousins from just a year plus ago to Chauncey Billups and others in recent years, you don't come back and look like the same player. You don't step back on the floor. It's like, boom, there's Kevin Durant. It's not like a hamstring injury or an arm injury or a hand injury. It takes you months, maybe even a season, to get back to the player you once were. And the idea that Kevin Durant would just plop himself into a super intense atmosphere on a team that even with him probably didn't have much of a chance to win anything, now that we know that Kyrie Irving is still out, it just never made any sense. It was the Nets all along, to me anyway, trying to not speak for Kevin Durant, let Durant speak for himself, and finally he ultimately did.
Good stuff as always, my man. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Excited to be finally able to talk about actual games as opposed to viral loads as we analyze the NBA.
You got it, Clay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.